One of the adoptive children of former Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin has filed a protective order against him. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about what Jonah Bevin says happened to him and why he's seeking legal action are independent journalist Deborah Yetter and Jonah Bevin's lawyer Dawn Post. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Hello.
Debbie, tell us how Jonah Bevin became a member of the Bevin family.
When Governor Bevin, when Matt Bevin ran for governor in 2015, he talked a lot about his adoption of four children from Ethiopia. In 2012, they adopted a sibling group of three plus Jonah, who's the subject of a lot of the current reporting, and decided to adopt outside the U.S. because he said... Matt Bevin at the time said they had been denied an adoption in Kentucky because the state felt like they already had too many children in the home. They had five biological children of their own.
And what did Jonah tell you, Debbie, about his early years with the family?
Well, it was rather startling. He's only come forward in recent weeks since he turned 18 and agreed to talk about it. But he basically said he struggled with trying to adjust to the new setting. He didn't speak English when he first arrived at age five. He had some reading and writing, learning disabilities he needed help with. And he said generally the home was neglectful and abusive. He had a lot of conflicts within the family. He said he was struck and threatened and basically punished a lot.
Hmm. Debbie, how old was Jonah when the Bevins first sent him to a facility outside of Kentucky?
He said at age 13, he was first sent to one of several out-of-state residential placements off and on. He came back, I think, at least once when he was around 16, but then was sent away again.
Well, in this last place that he was sent to was in Jamaica. Debbie, how did he end up in Jamaica?
That's, I think, surprising to many people, too. There are consultants who help parents identify these placements, and then there are so-called, quote, transport teams that come and basically get the minor, sometimes against their will, and take them to the location. In this case, it happened to be a placement the Bevins had apparently had identified outside the United States in Jamaica that was described as a residential treatment facility to help troubled kids, but apparently was, according to all allegations, was extremely abusive.
Dawn, what does Jonah say happened to him at that facility in Jamaica?
Well, I do want to point out that Jonah actually attended what I call the trifecta of some of the most abusive programs in the U.S. and outside of the U.S. in terms of catering to adoptive families. The first was Master's Ranch, where he was at 13, where he slept in coffin beds. He also spent time at Liahona, where they shaved his locks and his hair to the scalp right when he got there, before he was then transported to Atlantis Leadership Academy. And many of these placements have a history of abuse allegations, licensing issues, and fatalities. And so it is very concerning that he actually went to the trifecta of the worst programs possible and ended up outside of a country where there is no licensing, regulation, or oversight. At Atlantis Leadership Academy, all of the boys that were rescued described really what the Geneva Convention would label torture, placing children in stress positions, and having them kneel on bottle caps, waterboarding. They were beaten frequently, and they were very malnourished when they were rescued due to food deprivation and water deprivation.
Dawn,
I think Jonah told me he had lost about 20 or 30 pounds when he was there, and he's not, you know, a large person already.
Okay. No, I believe he was 117 pounds when he was rescued.
Oh, and he's a tall young man, isn't he?
He is. He's about 5'10", I think.
Hmm. Dawn, how long was Jonah at this facility in Jamaica?
Jonah was at the facility approximately 3 months when he was rescued. He entered the program in December 2023 and then was rescued by Child Protective Services in Jamaica in February 2024.
We're talking about Jonah Bevin, an adoptive son of former Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin, and what he says happened to him at a facility for troubled youth, and actually several facilities for troubled youths. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dawn, you've mentioned Jonah's rescue. Can you walk us through how Jonah and the other children at this place in Jamaica finally were able to leave?
Well, one of the older youth who turned 18 returned to the United States, and he smuggled out notes that the boys had written about what they were being forced to do and what they were enduring at the facility. And a family member of that young man called the embassy, who involved Child Protective Services. They had been aware and had been concerned about the facility for some time. But at this time, when they went to visit, and the facility had moved without notifying the embassy, and it took them a while to track it down, and they were in not a great facility at that point, certainly not what is featured on the website, but there was active abuse and neglect that was observed by Child Protective Services, and they immediately removed all the teens from the program.
Debbie, what did Jonah tell you about that time, just about what he was thinking when these Child Protective Services people showed up? How did he talk to you about that?
Well, as I recall, he had become sort of hopeless. He didn't think anyone was listening to him. They had little to no contact with the outside world or their families. And so he described the day they arrived, the child protective workers arrived. They were all sitting around, I think, reading books, which was pretty much all they were allowed to do, he says. And they saw, sort of a convoy of government cars get out, pull up, and people get out with badges and so forth. And he said at that point, the youth started to think, you know, maybe we're going to get out of here. And that, in fact, is what happened.
Dawn, is this facility still in operation in Jamaica?
Absolutely not. It has not been open since the boys were removed from the program. However, I do want to note that there is another facility in Jamaica that I am investigating, as well as other entities, called Youth the Vision Academy, YOVA, that has approximately 160 to 180 adopted youth. The majority are adopted from the U.S. and are placed in this facility in Jamaica. And this is of incredible concern because it has direct ties to a facility in the United States that was closed for the torture of children called Miracle Meadows. And so I am representing a number of survivors as well from that program who describe really incredible abuse and neglect and abandonment by their adoptive parents as well.
Debbie, I understand that lawyers for this now closed facility in Jamaica have described kind of a different version of events. What have they said about the treatment that Jonah and the other youths at the facility received?
Well, Dawn, in fact, was apparently present for some of these court hearings. I was not. I only learned about this after the fact, but according to written accounts of it and comments from some of the participants, the lawyers for the facility, who were in fact joined by some of the parents, argued that the boys were exaggerating or making up stories about their treatment, and they were arguing to have the facility reopened and the boys return to it.
Is that what you would tell us what the courtroom was like, Dawn?
The first court appearance that I attended was very unusual in that the building itself is on top of a police station. And so it was the discarded vehicles and burnt out vehicles. So it was an unusual setting. But when I walked into the courtroom, all of the boys were standing in a group behind, you know, other individuals. And all of the attorneys were just sitting around a table, and not once did anyone refer to the teens. Did they mention the teens? Did they introduce themselves to the teens? Which, as an attorney for children, I found to be a little disconcerting when they are the subjects of what was happening. In addition, there were three attorneys that were present for biological and adoptive parents. However, the Bevins chose to have their voice heard through the Atlantis Leadership Academy attorney, where they asked to have Jonah return to the facility and have it reopened.
One thing I might mention here, which is sort of interesting, is that the founder of the facility, an American named Randall Cook, apparently was not present at any of the court hearings. And there were a series of federal lawsuits pending in Miami, Florida, against Atlantis and other related entities, including Randall Cook, which basically state that he has apparently fled Jamaica to avoid criminal charges that some of the staff from the facility are facing, and has not responded to any of the lawsuits against him. So it's not really known where he is and what he's doing right now.
So, Debbie, I guess you've had no luck trying to track down Randall Cook.
I have not. The only contact I have are some emails and a website, and the phone number for the school was out of service, and I'm not hearing anything through any other contacts I have.
Debbie, what have you heard from the Bevins, from Matt Bevin and his former wife, Glenna Bevin, or their lawyers? How have they responded to all this?
They have not since the first story ran February 28th, and I had contacted them previously, of course, before the story ran. I heard nothing and have heard nothing since, even though there have been a couple of subsequent stories that I've also attempted to reach them about, and other media have as well, including when Jonah came to Louisville. I guess it was last week. This all runs together. He came to Louisville and obtained a emergency protective order against Matt Bevin, whom he indicates he's still fearful of. And so there's been a fair amount of media attention to this, yet no responses from the Bevins that I'm aware of.
Dawn, have you gotten any legal response from the Bevins about any of this?
I have not, except for the fact that yesterday the Bevins filed a motion in their divorce case to settle their divorce and have it under seal. And so, in fact, local counsel in Louisville have filed a motion to intervene on behalf of Jonah, because he, in fact, was a subject of those divorce proceedings while he had been abandoned in Jamaica and was supposed to have been receiving support. So this is a very unusual move, but we felt it was necessary, given that it appeared that they were trying to move forward without having Jonah's voice heard.
And I should mention, I filed a story today for the Kentucky Lantern saying that Jonah has filed a motion to intervene in this case. And just reading from the language, it says, at present, no one who has Jonah's interest is involved in the litigation. And so they're seeking to give him a voice in any kind of potential settlement of the Bevins divorce, saying he was denied support and care that he was entitled to.
Well, we are going to continue this conversation after a short break. And later in the program, we'll hear from a wolf behaviorist about what humans can learn from the wolves he's observed. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about Jonah Bevin, an adoptive son of former Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin, and the legal action that Jonah is taking. My guests are independent journalist Deborah Yetter and Jonah Bevin's lawyer, Dawn Post. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Before our break, we were talking about some of what's happening in Louisville right now, but I want to back up just a little bit to this facility in Jamaica and what Jonah experienced after he was rescued. I understand most of the other children who were released from this facility returned to their families or other adults who agreed to take custody of them. Dawn, what happened to Jonah?
So Jonah, along with two other adoptees, and quite frankly, I think it's very notable that the only youth that were abandoned in Jamaica and placed in the permanent custody of Jamaica's Child Protective Services were adoptees who were all of color and who were all adopted by white, wealthy Christian families. But the parents had 60 days in order to make arrangements to have their children return to the United States. When they did not act within those 60 days, and I was present for two of those court appearances, and in fact didn't even show up to any of the court appearances, then the children were placed into the permanent custody of Jamaica.
So, Debbie, how did Jonah finally make his way back to the U.S.?
Well, as I understand it, there were some advocates working on his behalf, including Dawn, his lawyer, but also the Paris Hilton Foundation has become involved in, and had become involved in the situation because of her concern, Paris Hilton's concern over the what she calls the troubled teen industry that she said she herself experienced as a teenager, and how Usern was treated. And so she has an advocacy organization that I believe was also working on Jonah's behalf, and through just the work of the child welfare authorities and advocates, and I presume with the eventual consent of his parents, he was able to get back into the United States at a residential placement.
And Dawn, there's also a part of this story that somehow the Bevans offered to help Jonah return to Ethiopia. Tell us about that.
That was very unusual, and it came up just within the last few weeks, right around the time that Debbie Yetter, in fact, had emailed the parents' attorneys to get comment from them about his homelessness in Utah. And Jonah was offered a trip to Ethiopia. He was going to be transported by apparently the owner of the adoptive facility that had arranged his original adoption years ago, but has now since closed. But Jonah became very concerned when he was not given identifying information about the biological mother, who he had always believed to be dead, but was now told was alive. And as he expressed further hesitation, more family members cropped up. And when he was unable to get an exact itinerary of where he would be, and he thought there was no return ticket, then he chose not to get on the airplane. And I sent a very strongly worded email to the mother's attorney asking for information about his family, because of course he's desperate to have that connection and to ensure that this was a legitimate offer. And I received no response. In fact, I did have a conversation with Mrs. Bevan where she asked me to lie to her son in order to get him on the plane to leave the country. So it was just very unusual.
And I should mention here, Jonah, in his statement to obtain his emergency protective order said when this came up, he concluded that he believed his adoptive family wanted him to disappear.
Dawn, tell us more about that protective order that Jonah has filed against his adoptive father, Matt Bevan. What t talked walk us through that process.
That was not the original action that we had intended to take when we first arrived in Louisville. In fact, we had approached the Commonwealth Attorney's Office as well as the County Attorney's Office to be able to file or take out a warrant with respect to abandonment that he had experienced. It is my position that the actions or inactions of choosing to leave him in Jamaica and abandoning him there with no support while a divorce was pending and he was a subject of that matter constitutes a crime. However, they did not take the report, and we were advised to go to the police station, and we did file a report with the police. They also made a referral to the FBI. And so it was a very unsuccessful day. And at that point, we decided that, particularly if Jonah was considering, and he was is considering returning to Kentucky, and in fact, his last legal address is in Kentucky, that he would need a protective order to be able to do that, and to and he's really searching for accountability. That's very, very important to him over anything else is justice and accountability, as well as bringing awareness and shining light to all of the adoptees who are being abandoned, because this is not an isolated incident. And so he filed that in order to get protection from himself because of the concerns that he's had based upon the historical information. And this was the first time he's been able to do that because he's recently turned 18.
Debbie, you mentioned this earlier, but I think it bears a little more discussion. Matt Bevin, when he was campaigning for governor, he campaigned on the issue of improving the state's adoption and foster care system. And his ex-wife, when she was First Lady of Kentucky, was a child welfare advocate, right?
When Glenna Bevan was First Lady, she made child welfare her kind of primary concern, as most First Ladies will pick some sort of cause or issue to support. And Matt Bevan, as a candidate and as governor, campaigned on and ran his administration on improving adoption. And his frustration was that it was too complicated and bureaucratic. You know, he mentioned, you know, repeatedly that the couple had been turned down by Kentucky officials for an in-state adoption because they already had five children. And he wanted to streamline it, make it easier and faster. And he also called on churches throughout the faith community throughout Kentucky to join him in adopting, saying that, you know, that would help reduce the number of children in Kentucky in foster care and waiting for adoptive homes.
Debbie, did Jonah talk to you about his experience as a part of the Bevin family during that campaign?
He did, and Bevin frequently took the family or the children with him to public appearances and posted quite a bit about them with photos on social media. And Jonah says now he believes it was just for Bevin's political advancement that he used the children, as he put it, sort of a prop to advance his political career.
Dawn, you referenced earlier that Jonah has experienced homelessness. How is he? I mean, how's he doing right now? It sounds like he's been through so much.
He has been through a great deal. And I think what is important for people to realize as well is that it's re-traumatizing every time he tells the story. However, he really does want to shed light on this issue and bring awareness to what happened to him and seek justice and accountability in this matter. I think it's really day to day. This is the first time that he's really able to stabilize, and there's been a GoFundMe that people have been very generous with. And in fact, he's now asked that people donate to a second GoFundMe that is a broader one for all abandoned adoptees that we're providing emergency assistance for. But he hopefully will stabilize with this financial support and have the opportunity and time to decide what his future is going to look like. But certainly it's really emotionally difficult to continue to revisit this. And I'll say that I read the comments that people have also stated. And one of the questions that's often asked is, well, what did he do to get sent away? As if somehow it was justifiable. And I do like to point out that, and I think it's important, that this is an adult problem, not a kid problem. And the solution is not just warehousing your kids in institutional care where they're abused, essentially what I call abuse by proxy. But I do believe with time he will, you know, find his path and be in a better emotional place with respect to all of this.
Dawn, what kind of support system does Jonah have? I mean, he grew up hearing that his biological mother had died. Now there's this uncertainty about whether he has relatives in Ethiopia. I mean, what's his support system?
Unfortunately, I'm one of his primary supporters as his attorney, which is incredibly sad that those are some of the strongest relationships, are the strangers who showed up in Jamaica when your adoptive parents didn't show up. And I will say that I did that pro bono and continue to work with him pro bono. He does have a small group of individuals in Utah that he has become close with, but right now he's fairly isolated from them.
I should mention here, Jonah told me he has a group chat with some of the other survivors of this situation, and they stay in touch with each other, I presume, by cell phone. And that he said that provides him some comfort.
Absolutely.
Well, I've been talking with independent journalist Deborah Yetter and Jonah Bevin's lawyer, Dawn Post. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll hear from a wolf behaviorist about what humans could learn from the wolves he's observed over many years. This is Cincinnati Edition.